All right. The committee is going to come to order. We do not yet have a quorum present. Representative Schumacher is available with House File 2833. Representative Schumacher, why don't we get started? And then when folks come in, we can start with a quorum. But if you'd like to introduce your bill and move your bill to wherever it heads next. Representative Schumacher.
Mr. Chair, and when we do a quorum and I have the opportunity to, I will move this to go to the General Register. House File 2833 corrects a drafting error to the value-based reimbursement legislation we passed for nursing homes last year. During the implementation of the new reimbursement system last interim, it came to our attention that there was a portion of the median total care-related cost per diems that was unintentionally left out as direct care costs. After recognizing the need for the change, Chairs Lori and Dean submitted a letter to Commissioner Jessen explaining the legislative intent of the objective for cleaning this and said that they would clean this up this session. That's what this bill does. Commissioner Jessen responded to that letter, recognizing that this, too, was the department's interpretation of legislative intent, and this bill will clean that up for everyone. And I believe that there are letters in your packets from Chairs Dean and Lori to the commissioner and the commissioner's response to that. Profound, I know.
All right. Do we have any questions for Representative Schumacher on 2833? All right. We are just going to hang out until we get a quorum, and I'll ask for additional questions at that time. But we will try to wrangle some members here. We are just coming up from the session, so folks are probably a little tardy in getting back. But we will try to wrangle them up, and if DFL could maybe send out another page, that would be great to get a quorum together. And until then, we will just chillax. Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Since we're just kind of treading water a little bit here for a second, I thought it might be a good moment to ask. As everybody knows, the governor's budget was released yesterday, and I wanted to ask the chair if you're planning to have any kind of a hearing on the governor's budget.
We have not scheduled that at this time, and we may be looking at all our pieces of that as we go forward. We have not yet scheduled that, and members have just started to take a look at it. And I know I haven't had a chance to even look at the entire budget myself.
So, Mr. Chair, you're saying that you just haven't made the decision yet, and you may pull out pieces of it to look at, but you don't think it's an important thing to have us have the commissioners here and actually talk about what they want and why they think they should have it?
Well, I think that the governor's bill will be moving through in some way, shape, or form. We haven't decided yet whether or not we look at all of that or parts of it. I know some of it will be encased in other bills, and I'm sure we'll be discussing those topics, whether or not it's within that bill.
Mr. Chair, it seems a shame to have Representative Schumacher just sitting there, and when he knows so much.
Well, he's there anyway. I don't know what's different.
Oh, well. Maybe we could
do that. Oh. Maybe slow, but I caught that one.
We should just get him to explain some aspect of nursing home funding to us, because you know he's probably the only one among us who understands all of this stuff. And
well, absolutely, no. And I do think that it would be remiss without to miss the opportunity to thank Representative Schumacher for not just bringing forward a really, I think, generational reform in nursing home funding in the last year, but also putting thousands and thousands and thousands of miles on his car and traveling around and visiting folks all around the state, both before and after passage. And I know that I have visited nursing homes that I had underestimated the effect that it has had on the facilities that I've visited, not just facilities, but the people working there. All across the state. So I tease Representative Schumacher a little bit, but
did we tease him about the beard yet? Because I like bearded Joe Schumacher.
Yeah, well, you can weigh in on that as you like.
Do we have quorum yet?
Something we can. I do want to appreciate all the hard work that he's done, and I think that maybe it would make sense to have Representative Schumacher. Not just kind of to maybe look at some of the major changes and impacts of the bill that you passed, and as well as how this affects that. That might be a good use of time, Representative Schumacher.
Well,
And we do have quorum, so I'll bring the committee to order.
Shoot.
And if you'd like to move your bill and then address that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that House Bill 2833 be recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. The only other point that I would add from my original comments to the discussion that we had in between it, that is that this cleanup language is also part of the Governor's recommendations in his bill. And ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. And 2833 obviously was introduced before the Governor's budget had come out. Any other questions to that or comments from Representative Schumacher?
Please vote yay.
With that, Representative Schumacher renews his motion that 2833 be recommended to be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. 2833 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, members.
And next up, we have House File 2534, Representative Albright.
Thank you.
Representative Albright, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Members, House File 2534, as it sits before you, is a licensing board modification and appropriation bill. It affects several of the agencies, and let me just, for the sake of brevity, give you an overview, and then I have three testifiers that, if there are questions, are certainly capable of answering them. There are three covenant or partitions to this bill. The first is a change in the benefit structure for part-time state employees, which requires a modification to their appropriation. There is also the an increase in the contested disciplinary cases that the board has experienced, which obligates an additional appropriation. And then also a recognition that the IT costs, fixed IT costs, for phone service, data storage, website support, et cetera, were set in fiscal 16-17 budgets as established, but those have also increased. With that, you have the bill before you. I'm happy to ask for phone a friends on these. I have Marshall Schrag, Jennifer Molenoff, and Cody Weiberg here to answer questions pertinent to each of their agencies.
All right, Representative Albright, I'm going to go ahead and move House File 2534 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Do we have questions for Representative Albright? Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I don't really have questions for Representative Albright at this point, but maybe for his testifiers if they're going to testify.
All right.
I'm happy to request that they come down, Chair.
All right. That'd be great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Molenhoff. I'm the director of the Minnesota Board of Marriage and Family Therapy, one of the three boards named in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm now the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Physical Therapy. Many of the committee members may know me from my 15 years of leading the Board of Dentistry as their executive director. I moved to physical therapy in June.
And Mr. Chair, I'm Cody Weiberg. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy.
All right, Mr. Weiberg, you can just go ahead and grab a chair there if you like and pull that back from the testifier or from the committee table if you like. All right. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the witnesses. I'm just wondering if each of you could describe for the committee the reasons why we're here. I understand licensing fees are to cover the costs of the administration of licenses for each of our professions. And so if you could just help the committee and for the record explain why we're here and if this is an ongoing increase, and if so, why. If you could just give us a little background, it would be super helpful.
Mr. Weiberg.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'll speak for the Board of Pharmacy. When we prepared our budget last year, we always use certain estimates of what our IT costs are going to be, how many contested cases we might have in terms of disciplinary matters, and a multitude of other things. In our particular case, we have a contract. We actually have two contracts with IT vendors. We're no longer directly involved in the negotiation of those contracts. That's now carried out by Minute. And I'm not saying that we could have done any better than Minute did. I'm not trying to imply that, but we weren't involved in that contract process. And so when we made our estimates, we made an estimate based on what previous increases had been. The increases were about $30,000 more than we thought they would be. Some of the other IT costs that we've had also were more than we thought they would be based on historical trends. Our particular board has actually almost never had a contested case before. We're usually able to come to an agreement with licensees. We're being disciplined, but we have one contested case going on right now and three others that I think are going to turn into contested cases. And again, because we've never had a contested case, we didn't budget as much money as we should have for that particular purpose as well. In 2017, we're asking for some additional money there. IT related, but a little bit different. The legislature passed legislation several sessions ago requiring all of the boards to establish criminal background checks. At the time that was passed, I don't think any of us really knew exactly what would be involved, but we have talked over the last several months to our criminal background check coordinator that the boards have hired and found out that we are in fact going to have to make changes to our licensing database that we did not know we would have to make, and so we're requesting some money for the next fiscal year for that.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Weiberg. So the funding increase that you're requesting now covers the additional costs for IT, the additional costs for contested cases, the additional costs for the implementation of background checks. Is that accurate?
Mr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. Also, the other thing is because our board has had a very large increase in complaints, we actually hired a disciplinary coordinator. And to get someone who was really qualified for that job, we had to offer near the top of the range, and we only estimated when we asked the legislature for the mid-range. So that bumped up our costs a little bit, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
And Mr. Weiberg, can you let us know what the increase per license will be for pharmacists in the state of Minnesota if we're able to pass this legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we're not asking for a fee increase. We collect a sufficient amount of money to cover this request and appropriation. Most of the boards do collect a little bit more than we need to spend when we try to build that up in reserves. And then we use those reserves for situations exactly like our board is in right now when we have unexpected contested cases. But we can only spend what the legislature appropriates no matter how much we can collect. And they'll tell you as well, but none of the boards here need to increase their fees to do this.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if the same question could be answered by the other two witnesses.
Ms. Mollenhoff or Mr. Schreck?
Thank you.
Just to add to that, we experienced, because of the increases in many of the things that Dr. Weiberg presented, back in June we had to lay somebody off, and we have not had the funding to be able to replace that person. And with a small agency, we're managing with two people, and so a third of our staff was let go, and we've not been able to replace that person since on a permanent full-time basis. We've delayed, and we're going to be hiring somebody on a part-time temporary basis through June, but we really would rely on this funding in order to be able to be fully staffed and provide the necessary services. I want to also point out to the committee, Mr. Chair, that this funding is not from the general fund. It is special revenue funds. So as Dr. Weiberg indicated, we, with the fees that we charge, those go into a special revenue account that's dedicated to each board, and we'd be paying for this out of reserves as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, very similar. A fair amount of our costs are related to contested cases. Our board, we're a small board. We went probably well over a decade without having a single contested case, or maybe only having one. We had four last year, and I have two currently, and expect, based on our caseload right now, that there'll likely be one more. So those have significant costs associated with them when you have to take a disciplinary matter all the way through that process. And then specifically the additional fixed costs, statewide fixed costs that the board has to pay for things such as information technology services. And then we have a part-time staff. Our board staff is at 2.5. That's our full complement. And funding for part-time staffing has changed fairly significantly over the last couple of years, just under various pay and benefit structures. And our ongoing budget just didn't have sufficient funds to allow that to continue. So we are in the position where, absent this increased appropriation, which we have fees in our special revenue account to cover, we would have to lay that part-time person off by the end of this biennial, or excuse me, this fiscal year.
And then, Mr. Chair, just one more for Representative Albright. Representative Albright, how are you?
Representative, how are you?
Good, thank you. So, Representative Albright, if we move this along and release these funds to these licensing boards, is it you're thinking that then each of these licensing boards will be they will have funding sufficient to modernize their technology in such a way that they are able to conduct the work that they need to without coming back for a further appropriation?
I appreciate the question. I believe that that is, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I think that's an excellent question, one that will be addressed in its next stop in State Cup High. But I also think it goes to the point of, are we serving the technology needs of our various agencies as well as we can? That's certainly a topic that we will take up and stake up by, but I can assure you that that will be properly vetted.
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Mr. Schrage would answer this for me. I'm looking at the bill, and I noticed that the appropriation for HPSP is getting moved, which makes sense since, you know, I assume that that's because that's going to go with you. But I also notice that the appropriation there, if I'm reading this right, is being reduced. So could you just address that for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, there is an amount of $850,000 in fiscal year 2016 and $864,000 in 17 that was appropriated to the Board of Dentistry as the administering board for the Health Professional Services Program. When I moved over to the Board of Physical Therapy, the Board of Physical Therapy was willing to take on that responsibility of being the administering board, but it's taken some time for us to meet the statutory requirement to move the funding from dentistry over to physical therapy, and that's what this attempts to do. As far as a reduction in funding, I think the only thing that might be apparent there is that there was $14,000 that was inappropriately or incorrectly awarded to HPSB that should have gone to the Board of Dentistry during this budget cycle, and so this bill corrects that. I'm sorry, did you see something other than the $14,000?
Well, Mr. Chair, to tell you the truth, I didn't do the math on it, so I don't know. Let's see. Yeah.
Representative Liebling, perhaps Mr. Berg could help us out with the math on that. You. Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schrag is correct. There are two things happening here with this rider. One is that it is officially moving the HPSP from the Board of Dentistry to the Board of Physical Therapy. Secondly, it's correcting an error in the rider number that was in the bill last year, which is $14,000 a year. The transfer of the funds could have happened administratively, but there was some discussion between Mr. Schrag and myself and the Senate analysts and MMB this summer that they could only transfer the amount in loss, so the amount had to be corrected to the right amount. So we're doing both of those things here, correcting the rider to the correct amount and moving it to the other board.
Okay, and Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Bergen. So everybody agrees, I assume, that this was an error that just needed to be corrected. Nobody's HPSP isn't saying, wait a minute, where's our $14,000 or anything like that, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's correct. Everyone agrees on this. It was simply an administrative error in the language of the rider that would have shorted the Board of Dentistry $14,000 a year. We're correcting that so the Board of Dentistry gets its correct amount of money and the correct amount moves over with the HPSP to the Board of Physical Therapy.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, if I...
Representative Lieber.
My second question would be to Dr. Weiberg, and that would be is the PMP program, the prescription monitoring program, funded separately? I know it's under the auspices of the Board of Pharmacy, but... this has nothing to do with the PMP, right?
Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's correct. We have a separate fund for the PMP. The PMP is funded jointly by all of the boards that license practitioners who can prescribe and by the Board of Pharmacy. Medical practice pays the most. We pay the next, then dentistry, and a few smaller boards. So it does come out of fees, but it is all handled separately in a separate account, and there's no shortfall in that account right now.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else? Does anyone else wish to testify on this bill? Seeing no other testifiers, we will close the testifier portion. Representative Albright, anything else to your bill?
Thank you for the hearing today, Mr. Chair, and I understand that you're moving this to stakeout finance.
That's correct. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2534 be recommended to be re-referred onto the Committee of State Government Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. 2534 is re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Thank you, Representative Albright. And
thank you, Chair Dean, and members.
Appreciate it. We have to approve the minutes. Representative... Hello. McDonald moves approval of the minutes for February 3rd and 15th. They are in your packets. Do we have any additions or changes to those minutes? Seeing no, I will, Representative McDonald moves approval. All those opposed, please say, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. They are approved. All right. Who is next? Our Representative Keel and testifiers to House File 2609.
Welcome, Representative Keel. We'll need someone to move your bill.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Keel. I will move House File.
I would appreciate that. I don't sit on this committee.
Yes, thank you.
So unless we've got new rules.
No, same rules, just a new timer here. I will move House File 2609 to be laid over. We have the bill before us. I understand that the A1 amendment is the author's amendment, so I will also move the A1 amendment. Rep. Keel, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know what? And I don't have it with me. I thank you very much. Appreciate that. Typically, I have all this stuff with me. The file folder's huge. Thank you very much. I am going to have Claire explain it for me, the changes in this amendment.
Hello. Please state your name for the record. And I understand that you... Okay, let's see. Yeah, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. My name is Claire Wilson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And the bill simply reorganizes some of the sections to get it into the correct shape and also merely changes the implementation date, pushing it back to July per federal guidance.
Very good. Any questions regarding the amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. Motion prevails. And we'll adopt that. Representative Keel, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair McDonald. Appreciate that. Members, House File 2609, some of you have already heard, I know, in policy, establishes a certified community behavioral clinic, health clinic, excuse me, with the express purpose of helping people with mental health and chemical dependency. It is designed to be a one-stop shop community clinic that provides comprehensive and coordinated integrated care, excuse me, to children and adults with complex mental and chemical health conditions. The CCBH, how's that for alphabet soup? would be funded, the beginning and the setting up would be from a grant that has been awarded by the federal government to the tune of $982,000 for us to set it up. But I am privileged to have the director of our Northwest Mental Health Center here with me today. Shauna Reitmeier is from Crookston, Minnesota, my hometown, and is a wonderful director dealing with many multiple counties and the mental health issues in our area. And so being she's come all this way, I want her to talk about what she deals with. Thank you.
Yes. Welcome. Please state your name for the record, and then you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. My name is Shauna Reitmeier, and I'm the CEO for the Northwestern Mental Health Center, located in Crookston, serving Kitsap, Marshall, Polk, Norman, Minomon, and Red Lake counties in the very up to the Canadian border and alongside North Dakota. And I'm also the current board president for the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. Thank you for this opportunity, and I also really want to thank Representative Keel for bringing this legislation forward and being the champion of this. I also want to thank all of you as well for the significant investment that you made last year in the mental health system. We're already starting to see the positive impacts of those decisions that you have made. The bill before you builds on that work and hopefully brings Minnesota closer to the promise of a fully funded and systematically designed mental health system. And I ask for your support of this critical legislation before you. As you all most likely know, community mental health centers were designed to act as the safety net to the state when they moved away from institutionalization. However, due to the chronic underfunding and barriers in expanding services, we have never fully been able to serve the most vulnerable populations in Minnesota the way that they deserve to be treated. This legislation provides the opportunity for individuals and their families in areas like mine that are very rural and a large remote geographic area for individuals to access the care. Individuals, children, and their families may have to travel anywhere upwards of an hour and a half one way in order to get the care that they need. We do our best as a provider to provide that comprehensive array of services. However, there's challenges in that. Access in those rural areas is very much a challenge. So this is a great opportunity. This legislation will provide the infrastructure, payment model, and emphasis towards quality that is needed in order to sustain and enhance the mental and chemical health safety net. And this legislation has a specific impact to that rural and greater Minnesota. This legislation provides the funding necessary for Minnesota to participate in an 8-state demonstration project which establishes the Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinics, the CCBHCs. These are designed to be the one-stop shops, as Representative Keel said, of certified clinics to to provide that comprehensive, coordinated, and integrated system of care. The CCBHCs will be funded under a new payment model, providing a daily cost-based rate service rate for all services provided to the Medicaid population. This stable funding piece is critical for our clinics, particularly as we consistently operate with low margins and struggle to recruit a workforce ready to meet the demand. This bill solidifies and strengthens the continuum of care while incentivizing normal relationships, formal relationships across the healthcare spectrum, allowing community mental health clinics to provide chemical, mental, and primary health care while remaining stable in an ever-changing economic environment. It is truly a transformative moment for the treatment of mental and chemical health. This legislation was passed as a federal at the federal level with strong bipartisan support through the Protecting Access to Medicaid Act in 2014. And then in 2015, as Representative Keel mentioned, the state of Minnesota was funded to apply for a planning grant. And Minnesota was awarded that planning grant and is now well positioned to be one of the 8 demonstration states in the nation. Minnesota now has the potential to leverage enhanced federal funding for a relatively small state investment that will ensure Minnesota remains a national leader in healthcare access, care, and coordination. But more importantly, this legislation will move us towards a system that increases the likelihood that a person will receive the care that they need before they enter into a crisis, lessening the burden on emergency rooms, law enforcement, and most importantly, lessening those burdens to the individuals and or their families. So I want to thank you for this opportunity, and I believe Claire also has some additional things to say potentially. So.
Thank you, Ms. Reitmeier. Members, any questions for her at this time? If not, then we'll let Ms. Wilson, Executive Director for Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health, take the mic.
Claire? Thank you, Representative. Again, my name is Claire Wilson, and I'm actually here also representing a broad coalition of counties, hospitals, primary care providers, chemical health providers, advocates, and stakeholders who've been working together for over a year to see this come to fruition. And it's primarily because the Excellence Act requires us to work together, which is both a unique thing, and I really believe that the depth and breadth of this coalition demonstrates and is indicative of the scope of possible change. So I think Shauna covered most of it very well. I just want to say you all know the crisis we're facing. And that crisis would be much more dire and exponentially worse if we did not have these community mental health centers in our communities doing the work they're doing. They are chronically underfunded. They're also, in my opinion, chronically underappreciated. And what this bill does is truly center care with the providers who have the expertise to provide that care while allowing us to communicate formally and effectively with hospitals and with social service agencies and with others who are as invested in reducing the cost of this care to our larger system. And I just want to say that this payment model that's before you in this committee today is paying businesses for doing the cost of business. So it's a cost-based rate. And that seems fairly common sense, but that is actually why this is so transformative, because it is a cost-based rate. It's going to hopefully stabilize providers and allow them to provide that coordinated care, expand their workforce, and, of course, in doing so, increase access. So as Shauna said, this is going to certainly help us upstream. It will definitely and hopefully decrease the burden on our hospitals and in our correction systems. And more importantly, it's going to save lives. This is not the final answer to the complex question in front of us of what do we do about this mental health system that has not been fully designed, but it's one important step forward. And if we do not act now, we will miss the chance to participate in the federal demonstration project. And why that's important is because there is an enhanced federal match for these Medicaid services in the demonstration project. So we really can't sit on the sidelines while other states get to define the way forward. We really appreciate you hearing this bill. We really appreciate the work that you've done, and we think this work will help us keep Minnesota as a national leader in mental health care access.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Members, the fiscal note is in your packet. for 2017, 18, and 19. So please refer to that if you have any questions. At this time, do we have any questions for our testifiers? Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Terry. Yes, I'd like to put out a charge to all the creative people in around the table and in the audience, because we have in our save folders a three-page single-space list of acronyms. But it's very out of date, and I've been one of the people who've said we have to start exploding this because it's making it really hard, more importantly, not for us as decision-makers to understand, but people in the service industry. And this is a wonderful model of coordinated care where you're working with local hospitals, with social service agencies, with the counties, with, you know, a wide range of groups. It's the kind of direction we ought to go. But I just off the top of my head said, gee, this, you know, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, this sounds like something else. And I was getting it confused. And then it's like, oh, maybe it's something else. Well, here's my list. Right now we already have CMHC, CCBHC, CBHH, BHH, and I probably have more just in mental health. So if I'm a family practitioner trying to figure out how to get my client into the best option within our community, it's really, really hard. So my challenge to all of us is to come up with better titles for all of these things that are doing wonderful work with people who need it in mental health. But it feels like when I can come up with just five off the top of my head that use the exact same letters, it's time for us to have some linguist helping us translate this system to the people who need it and the people who will refer people to the right place when they have a need for it. And I appreciate the bill, but I really think we've hit the limit on mental health acronyms with the same three or four letters.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. Question for the testifiers and or Representative Keel. The grant, I see a federal grant for the 24 states is around 900 and...
most of them got 980.
Yeah, 985,000. So how much will the state of Minnesota receive should this bill pass? Is that the amount?
Yes, that 984,000 is the amount that Minnesota has received.
Representative, did you say we have received it already?
I'll qualify that and let you, Sean.
Yes. Yes, Representative McDonald. The state of Minnesota received that $900,000+ for the planning grant that we applied for last year. So we are currently in a planning phase at this point. And so, and then I'm going to ask Claire to speak on the ask going forward. So in October, the goal is to be submitting our application to become one of the 8 demonstration states in the country. And so I think she can speak to the fiscal piece of that.
Mrs. Wilson?
Yes, Representative McDonald, thank you. So yes, the monies that the state has received and that the legislature last year authorized us to pursue will be distributed to clinics to begin the planning process. Then we will prepare an application to the federal government to participate in the demonstration project. At that point, if we are selected, then we will receive the enhanced match for those sites with the Medicaid population.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. And then the enhanced match, does that would that coincide then with the fiscal note? So
yes.
In 2017, it's an $8 million approximately appropriation. So that'll be a one-to-one match?
I think we don't know that yet, right?
Representative McDonald, it varies by the Medicaid population, but 65% match for that population.
Very good. Thank you. And then just I'll call on Representative Halverson in a moment, but out of that $985,000 that's going to be distributed to the clinics, both rural and metro, is some of that already going? Is that for not only implementation but actual for help for the mental health patients?
Representative McDonald, yes. It is at this point primarily will be targeted for allowing the clinics to create the infrastructure system change work they need to do to continue with the project.
Very good. Thanks, Ms. Wilson. Representative Halverson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Keel, for leading this effort. It's so important. I think the testifiers were really impressive, so thank you for making this case. One of the things that I'm very aware of sitting on this committee is that waste in our healthcare system exists, and when you look at the studies, the biggest piece of waste is care coordination failures. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's anybody's fault necessarily, but I think the point was raised that it was a good one, that we've built an insufficient system for today's families and today's patients. So let's build something better. And I believe strongly in Minnesota innovation. And so I think that Minnesota should be out front trying to lead in this area. And for food for thought, one of the things that I keep thinking about, and you don't have to respond to this now, but as you're thinking about how we're building this, I would love to hear more from you in the future about how we do our handoffs. One of the things I keep thinking about is that people who are presenting with mental health and chemical dependency issues aren't necessarily presenting at clinics that are mental health clinics or chemical dependency clinics. They're presenting for kids, they're presenting at their schools. And for adults, it's very often through an EAP, through their worker or through their primary care doctor. And the handoffs are just really not very effective for whatever reason. So I'm wondering, this sounds like an opportunity for us to make the handoffs much better and much safer for people so that we don't have to wait until somebody's in crisis before they get treatment. I think the opportunity for prevention here is really an important one. And those are questions that are constantly in my head about how do we build that better. And so as you are leading this effort, I certainly would love to hear more about how we can do better and then how we're going to expand that statewide. And I guess that's ultimately the crux of my question to you is, how are we going to report, and if we're successful, replicate this throughout the state? Have you guys thought through that, or what's the plan?
Thank you.
Learning
the formalities. Thank you for the question. Part of the demonstration project has a very strong rigor around quality measures that will be required of each of the certified clinics to be able to reporting. And so the goal is to be able to show the efforts of how this demonstration project works. So that's where I go initially. I'm sure there will be other things in terms of the reporting and through different systems that will more than likely be coming back to you all in terms of how this project will fully be realized.
Representative Halverson?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, will it get reported to the Department of Health, or is that what's we're looking to do in statute? Or
this will be going through, I believe, the Department of Human Services.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, that's...
Representative
Mr.
Halverson?
Chair, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to know, so I hope that we get the opportunity to hear results, because I think this is a great idea. I hope it goes forward, Representative Keel. Thank you.
Very good. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? If not, then any final comments, Representative Keel?
I would really appreciate that. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Chair McDonald, sorry.
You're excused and forgiven.
Thank you. In the last few months, I've dealt with some family issues on mental health and drug abuse, and I've had some constituents, as maybe all of you have had, call and say, hey, I've got a problem, I can't connect with somebody. And I really think this is important so that we can help direct people, the entities, whether it's school or clinics, hospitals, are able to seek help to help, stabilize this. And I think prevent sometimes serious crisis from happening, and helping the families to help themselves and help each other. I did, when I was on the school board, I didn't even think to share this with you, we had some concerns about mental health issues in grade school. And we couldn't afford another counselor, but we worked with the Mental Health Center in Northwest Minnesota, Northwest Mental Health Center, and had a social worker with an office right in the school, and now that's even expanded more. And I think it's really helped connect the dots, and so I see this as being a bigger portion of that, being able to help people and families and then be able to keep it consistent for them so that they've got almost a one-stop area to take care of health issues, mental health issues, or abuse, chemical abuse issues. So I'm excited to see this happen, and I thank you very much for the consideration.
You're very welcome, Representative Keel. Earlier today, I was talking with a good friend after a committee on mental health issues, and we've made a lot of advancements in our state on many issues, on cancer and Alzheimer's and so many other diseases, but mental health issues, we have yet to make a lot of progress. So this is a very good good idea and good bill to get to the root of the problem and really help those folks that need help. So thank you for bringing this forward to the committee. If there's no other discussion, then I will re-refer House File 26.
Lay it over.
No, yeah, lay it on the table. I'm going to lay House File 2609 to be laid over. Something like that. Let me put my glasses on and read the script. House File 2609 is amended as and laid over. Okay, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, members.
Next we have Representative Zervos, the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, with his bill. So, Representative Zervos, you want to take the testifying table? Representative Zervos, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, members, I move House File 2554 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Very good. We have the bill before us. I understand that you have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair, members. I have an A1 amendment, which is required to make the exemption statewide to comply with CMS rules.
Members, any questions to Representative Zerwas's amendment? If not, all those in favor say A. Or aye. Say A or aye. All opposed, say no. Motion carries. Representative Zervos, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2564 provides an exemption for the provider tax for ambulance services. Currently, across the state, rural ambulance services are being audited by the Department of Revenue from a misunderstanding about how and when they needed to start paying the 2% provider tax. Most rural ambulance services didn't realize that once they got a part-time medic as a part of their rig, that then they then qualified for this tax. It was never brought up. And the Department of Revenue alerted those rural ambulance services by beginning audit processes on ambulance services across the state. That's how I first found out about this issue late last year when the Elk River area ambulance service was audited and stuck with a significant bill. We had ambulance services in greater Minnesota that quite frankly thought they would have to perhaps sell their rig to pay the bill. So with that, we met with several stakeholders even within the Department of Revenue, and we were able to negotiate a process by which the look back for the back taxes was shortened and the penalties and fines were not assessed going backwards. And then we started talking about most of these rural ambulance services believed they were exempted and probably should be exempted just because of the type of work and the volume that they do. That being said, we started the process of looking at a rural ambulance provider tax exclusion and ran into some concerns with CMS, and that was the amendment we just put on the bill to make it statewide. Buck McAlpin with the Minnesota Ambulance Association is with me today and can provide some of the information if I've missed it.
Yes, Buck, or Mr. McAlpin, the former mayor of Annandale, you have the table.
Mr. Mayor and members, thank you. Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. I think Representative Zerwas hit it on the head. And Revenue was very good to work with on this, on reducing some of the penalties. But the interesting thing is we worked hard to add some paramedics to rural Minnesota, especially to staff some of our ambulances with low coverage. That knocked them out of the $6,000 window we use to define a volunteer. And to offset good care, they ended up being hit with this penalty. And it wasn't a legislative initiative or ambulance association. it actually came to many of you around the table that were contacted by your local rural ambulances that this was an issue. So as we walked through the process and in the policy hearing, it came up of why it wasn't a statewide exemption, and working with DHS to make it a uniformed exemption, we had to change it to a statewide exemption. So I think you'll see in the fiscal note there's a savings to the state because there's a 2% pass-through that the state was providing for the population and fee-for-service to the ambulance services to pay some of this, but the MnCare tax exemption well outweighs that impact to the budget.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. McAlpine. Members, any questions for Mr. McAlpine? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not even sure what to ask. With the change to the bill, could you just sort of walk us through now who is getting the exemption now that we've amended the bill?
Mr. McAlpine.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's a great point, and one piece I forgot to allude. There's about 850 fire departments in Minnesota. So the way the law is written, and my past partner who passed away, O.J. Doyle, and I have talked about changing this for years, and we never really got it done until the audit started, was that if Representative Hamilton and I are on the local volunteer fire department and we get paged to a call today and we get paged $8 each to go to a car accident, we're considered a certified responder. That means by law we have to pay 2% on that $8 we got. Now we know that was never the intention of the MnCare law when it went through. The second exemption, Representative and Mr. Chair, is all ambulance services licensed under 144E. So that's about 288 to about 290 now of what are individual licenses.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McAlpin, I don't have the statutes memorized, so I don't know who's licensed under those sections and who isn't. I mean, can you give this to me a little bit more in layman's language? So if we were to pass this bill, which emergency response services still have to pay the provider tax? Maybe we could do it that way.
Mr. McAlpine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, anybody that was certified to the state EMS regulatory board as a responder, first responder, EMT, paramedic would be exempt from the tax.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. So who is left of emergency responders? Nobody?
Mr. Chair, it pretty much covers and excludes everybody.
Okay, and so Mr. Chair, thank you. So the fiscal note is not with the amendment, I take it. So could you give us, so do we know what the impact is going to be from this? Because that sounds like quite a lot of folks.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling, the fiscal note does apply to the amendment.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Zerwas. I mean, Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note, and Mr. Burke can certainly help with this explanation, but the fiscal note itself shows a savings, a net savings. What does not show up right now and what we won't get is a revenue note until we get this bill to the tax committee. Mm-hmm. That will show the missing revenue going into the health care access fund.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good. Does that answer your question, Representative Liebling?
It starts to, Mr. Chair. And I guess, the concern I have about this is I know there are a lot of issues with the provider tax. And certainly, Mayo Clinic in my district, really hates the provider tax. But since we've got it, I don't know how fair it is. I understood sort of where you're going with this, and I get why you had to change that, but I'm not sure really how fair it is to exempt anybody who provides emergency services. Could you give us, given that the bill's in the shape it's in now, can you kind of give us the rationale of why, and also when you talked about how, if you make $8, as I understand it, the provider tax is supposed to be passed through to the patient. That's why it gets called the sick tax, right? And I know that not everybody finds it easy to do that, but it's supposed to be a surcharge. The provider isn't supposed to be collecting their $8 and then having to pay it as though it was a tax on them. They build it into their prices in some cases, I understand. So could you just address that a little bit?
Representative Liebling, are you wanting Mr. McAlpine to address that?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lieberman, members, I think I'll step back a little bit to the fiscal note discussion. All those fire departments haven't been paying, and they don't charge. The interesting thing is the provider tax is on our commercial market and on Medicaid. Medicare is exempt. One of the large problems rural ambulance services see, why we wrote the bill initially, our ambulance association agrees with you. We tried to do 5,000 and less transports to just make it a rural issue because they felt it was a little bizarre to pay a tax when I tax local homeowners to provide a service that is willfully underfunded to operate. So when the large revenue estimates came in of what they had to pay, that's where the discussion started. So I wouldn't disagree with you. And the reason why we had to make it statewide is to be able to make it work legally with CMS without quite a waiver process. So you're right, a lot of our EMS systems operated by very large providers that do pay into the provider tax, but it was more of a semantics issue about how we make it work out. So a lot of those other fire departments in them, they haven't been audited yet, but they could be audited under state law unless we change this.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know, it just seems like maybe I'm not fully understanding this, but you've got an effective date of 2016, till June 30th, and so if you were looking back and they already, you know, if they were audited, it seems like this bill isn't doing them any good, right? Or am I missing something there?
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I think the reality is we did, I think, in my estimation, working with Mr. McAlpin and the Ambulance Association, I think we did everything we could as far as looking back to help our rural ambulance associations with their back tax issue. Certainly, anything that we did that went retroactive would carry a more significant fiscal impact. And so the way we see it, we were able to limit, with our work with revenue, we were able to look back the period on as far as revenue was going to go for a look back. We were able to mitigate late payments and tax penalties. And so I feel like we've done about as much as we can with revenue without getting them here being upset with me. And so that's, I think, what we've been able to do looking backwards. And then the next thing was, for some of these ambulance operations that don't have it in their ability to build in this 2% moving forward, what do we do to stop this from occurring again? And so we looked at the smaller exemption and then had the issues with the necessity of a CMS waiver, and now we're looking at, well, what does it look like? And it'll be interesting to see when the revenue note comes in taxes, and what does this look like if we just exempt the EMS service from the provider tax?
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that this bill is going next to the tax committee, and I'm quickly trying to review the note that we have here, and I don't know that you know the answer to this, Representative Zerwas, but I am curious to understand what the cost, what the impact on the healthcare access fund is with if this becomes law. It seems like the relevant question for this committee.
Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. Unfortunately, as we move this bill through, the revenue note that we need was unable to be provided to us until this bill is referred to taxes. And so, and I think Mr. Berg, I know I saw an email from Mr. Berg that went out to the committee administrator and some other folks with that concern as well. And Mr. Berg kind of further explained that process and the revenue note process. I don't often work on tax issues, so this is somewhat new for me going through this part of it.
Representative Murphy, would you like to ask Mr. Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be great if Mr. Berg has something more to offer, but if you don't, that's okay. Mr. Chair. Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Zerwas, yesterday we got the we saw the governor's supplemental budget, and I haven't really been able to dig in yet to the health and human services parts of that supplemental budget, but there are some interactions between the general fund and the healthcare access fund, and that is, of course, occurring within the time period where we are contemplating as a legislature whether or not we should reinstate the provider tax. So as we contemplate this, I am wondering if there are other providers that are going to want to come and make their case here or in the tax committee to be exempted from the provider tax, and if you've had others come to you already with that suggestion. I think that, you know, I'm concerned, right, that we are opening up one of those boxes that we don't necessarily want to open up as we contemplate this with good cause, you know, that with good cause to contemplate this. But I don't know what the ramifications are going forward in the midst of this conversation about the Healthcare Access Fund, Minnesota Care, the governor's budget, et cetera. Do you have a comment on that?
Representative Zerwas, would you like to open up the Pandora's box?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I have not had anyone else reach out to me after seeing this bill out there. And I think I'm involved with this bill just because of the work that we were trying to do with my rural EMS service in Elk River and some of the others. We had Lake City EMS suddenly had an audit and was looking at, I think, $100,000 back tax bill. We had a group just outside of Fargo that had an audit that was looking at, I think, close to $80,000 in back taxes. If we started getting these popping up all over, that's when I contacted Mr. McAlpin and we started working on this issue. It has morphed over the last 3 weeks because of the CMS exemption, or pardon me, the CMS requirement and the statewide exemption. Since then, it's not as straightforward of a bill as it was 3 weeks ago. I completely agree with you and I completely understand that concern. That being said, with our process the way it's set up and without getting this bill referred to a committee where we can actually get a revenue note, I don't know what that looks like yet. And I can't quantify just how big of an issue it is until we're able to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Zerwas, do you anticipate that if this moves forward that it would be carried in a text omnibus bill?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know. That's certainly probably the easiest way to do it. And I know there's generally, from never being on the tax committee and only being here for in my second term, I know there's generally concern about launching tax bills on their own back and forth. So that being said, I think tax chairs or the speaker or other members would have concern about bringing a tax bill to the floor of the House on its own.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. And Representative Zerwas, I would ask just respectfully that when you get the revenue note, that if you could share it with the committee. I'm not going to ask you to bring the bill back here, but if you could share it with the committee so we can appreciate and understand the impact on the Healthcare Access Fund, I think that would be really important before it comes to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Members, Representative Murphy, absolutely. And I was frustrated that with our process that wasn't available today. And so I will, as soon as we get it, once it's in taxes, we'll make sure that it's distributed to the membership of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Representative Zerwas, any final closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for the time. And when this bill gets to taxes, we'll see if it's doable or not. With that, I'd like to re-refer my bill.
Very good. As soon as I get my script back, I'll read it. Yes. Representative Zerwas has a motion to House File 2564 as amended to be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Be referred to re-refer to the Committee on Taxes, which I sit on that committee, so I'll watch that closely. Members, this is the end of our meeting, so just a reminder for those that need reminding, some don't, that tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, so please wear green if you got it. Grunhagen, especially you. Being no other business, this meeting is adjourned.